Hey, conscious leaders, a warm welcome. I've got such a precious gift to give you today. My friend Dr. Adriana Marais is joining me today, but before I tell you a little bit about her, I met with her about 2 weeks. It was meant to be a lunch. And it ended up being a full day. When you put us together, it's like two troublemakers. We had such an incredible day together and such deep conversations. And I said to her, Yissi, we have to bring this to the podcast. We have to. There was a specific thing that we spoke about. Is the system is broken. It's time to build a parallel system. And it was such an in-depth conversation. So before we get into all of that nitty-gritty, I'd like to introduce you to Dr. Adriana Marais. She's a theoretical physicist, a technologist, aspiring extraterrestrial. She's the founder of Proudly Human, a director at the Foundation for Space Development. Gosh, Singularity University. She was supposed to take a one-way ticket to Mars 1 as an astronaut. Gosh, we have a history. You have to go into the Carmen Murray Show. You'll see Dawn. We've had two or three interviews talking about all these things. But I brought in Adriana because there's just somebody that just inspires and blows your mind. And also, she's got the audacity to say what she thinks. And that's what I love about her. So without further ado, Adriana. Oh, and I forgot to mention that you're also serving on our advisory board for conscious leaders, and we are so excited about it. But without further ado, Adriana, welcome.
Thanks, Carmen, and that was saving the best for last. I'm super excited to be working together with you on conscious leaders, and we'll try not to go on the whole day in this podcast like we did last time we met, but always such a pleasure and so energizing to chat with you, so thanks for having me.
Oh, fabulous. Okay, it wouldn't make sense if I don't ask you, what does the word conscious leaders or being a conscious leader mean to you?
Well, let me try to keep that short, because defining consciousness is the first thing I want to do, which we haven't quite got to from a scientific perspective. But I think, yeah, understanding the role that we as these beings that find ourselves in this world play. I mean, we are conscious, right? When we look around us, we see, yeah, a lot of shortcomings of the kind of organizational structures and the systems that we have in place on this planet. So whether or not we kind of grew up imagining ourselves as leaders or, you know, whether we are gravitating towards leadership or whether we are thinking the last thing we want to do is be in charge of anything right now in this chaos that we see around. I think consciousness and leadership are two central and critical things that should be on our minds right now as we conceptualize the future. So super important. I think what's really important is to take into account all the diverse perspectives on those two things. So I think bringing people together to discuss the real questions, to discuss the real issues is really important. For me, I've got a background in science, so I do refer back to scientific training in some ways to think about ways that we can understand the world and our role in it. Yeah, but at the end of the day, science has got a lot of shortcomings. It's one of those systems that has a lot of shortcomings. So it's a super exciting time, I think, to put our heads together, put our minds together, put our hearts together and think about, leading the way into a new future.
100%. And you couldn't have said it better. And I always love your perspective on things. You remember when we had our first interview, when you were supposed to, take your one-way ticket to Mars, and we were talking about quantum computing and how we can learn so much from trees and the biology behind everything around us that we're not actually paying attention to. And I started seeing quite recently, like, people are creating this technology where they attach it to a tree and then they can actually hear a tree talking back to them, or a tree making frequency sounds and things like that. And I was like, oh my gosh, everything is conscious. It really is.
And everything is connected. That was something I was thinking about yesterday. And just to briefly, I'm busy writing a book. So when I'm done with that, I need to get back into editing that book. So let me try and keep this brief, because I can happily explain the whole thing to you as well. My scientific journey is kind of, let's go back to the beginning as a physicist and the Big Bang. Did you know that 10% of your body is as old as the universe itself? So this is a scientific perspective. This is according to mainstream theory, 380,000 years after the Big Bang, which was like literally very soon after the Big Bang in universal scales, we saw the first matter emerging, and that was in the form of neutral hydrogen atoms and also some helium atoms. So given all of our observations of the universe around us, we don't actually see any other processes by which hydrogen is made in significant amounts. So we know that our bodies are more than half water. We know that water is made up of H2O. So those hydrogen atoms that form those water molecules in your body are basically as old as the universe itself, sure. around 14 billion years, according to current theory. So when we think about the interconnectedness of things, we can literally go back to as far back as we can go in our small human minds to the beginning of the universe, see that same matter there that's sitting in our bodies right now, and imagine having, you know, a library basically of the whole existence of the universe within our bodies. Then we look at living systems, we see we all share this water, so we all share this commonality with the beginning of the universe. In fact, the water on our planet is older than our sun. So when we look inside the nuclei of the atoms of the hydrogen inside the water, we see that it's been irradiated by other stars beyond our sun. So it's not the first time for our oceans being shone on by a star. So I think when we fast forward now, let me not take you through the whole 14 billion year process of getting to where we are today. There is this interconnectedness. That's the most sort of powerful conceptual, you know, observation that I can make of the world right now, is the interconnectedness, whether it's in the DNA, which we all share since the past 4 billion years of evolution of life on this planet. You know, we have far much more of the genetic code in common than not in common when we compare ourselves, of course, to other humans, but even to other organisms and even to microbes like bacteria and archaea. We are all of the same lineage. So I think as humans, we've just reached the point now where we have perhaps started to replicate this interconnectedness through our global communications network. And in order to understand that interconnectivity that has already existed since the beginnings of what we can understand as the universe, we now busy beginning to build such systems ourselves. And back to the tree comment, you know, we're recently discovering that fungal mycelium networks distribute information, but also resources, not only between the same species of tree, but between all sorts of different organisms via the soil, under the ground, in the forest. So I think we're at this exciting time now where our technology, with its pros and cons, is in fact showing us the most deep and fundamental nature of the universe, which is this like real interconnectivity. And being able to listen and talk to trees, I think, is a great way to start. If we're lucky enough to hear any messages, it's a great way to appreciate that on a daily basis.
I love it. And I've actually started hugging trees because I'm like, okay, I can do that. But I heard something so profound where if you had to ask a earthworm, you know, does the stars exist because it's sentient? It wouldn't know because it's below the surface of the soil. It wouldn't know what's beyond there. And I think that we're reaching a stage where we're starting to realize there's a lot more to this than we thought it was.
In all aspects. Yeah, I mean, back to the fungal mycelium networks. Yeah, I mean, there are some living systems that are called extremophiles because they can survive conditions that most living forms would find extreme, especially complex life like humans. And that then takes my mind back to the question of, you know, did the extreme living systems that can survive in extreme conditions on Earth perhaps evolve these capabilities in places beyond Earth? And a lot of my research was focused around thinking about the origins of life, so studying photosynthesis from a molecular perspective in quantum biology, trying to understand this most robust, most efficient living process that's been around pretty much the whole of the existence of life on Earth, led me to the question of, you know, where did this life come from? And to take us a bit from Earth into space, I think a very compelling theory about the origins of life is that life was delivered to Earth inside rocks, like meteorites that fell into some pleasant pool of most precious liquid water amongst all the other nutrients that were required for the first living systems to perhaps jostle up to the surface and start using the light as the early photosynthetic systems did. But yeah, we can talk about a million things, but I think space really gives us a perspective of who we are. Earth is really busy. Earth is really beautiful. Earth is full of mysteries that are still waiting to be solved. But for me, the biggest mysteries have always been in the biggest possible perspective, and like looking up at the night sky and imagining the ocean that perhaps was on another planet where fungal spores already knew their existence before Earth are some really inspiring thoughts to, yeah, get us going in space research, which is a big part of my activities.
Oh, I love it. I'm like, oh my gosh, I wish I had the brains to do what you do. Because seriously, the stuff that you need to know. Oh my gosh, it's insane. Oh my God. But listen, the other thing is, audience, so Adriana is busy with big things, like getting telescopes onto the moon. She rubs shoulders with some of the most powerful people in the world, politicians. She was supposed to be in Russia, and now she's here with us because they cancelled because of restrictions or something. And now she's here. And I'm like, this is the world that you live in. Take us through a day in the life of Adriana Marie. What are you up to? What do you do? How interesting is this life of yours? Seriously.
Well, all the stuff I do confuses me sometimes, so let me just stick with the thing that I'm spending a lot of time on lately, which is, as you say, the world's first radio telescope array on the moon. So the project's called Africa to Moon. And let me start with the motivation. So when I've looked up at the night sky, I've always felt a sense of belonging. You know, maybe I felt less at home on this planet than I do with the vastness of imagining what's beyond, or maybe more than imagining, who knows. But the night sky is always a place I've felt an affiliation with. And it's really an exciting time for space exploration right now, with all sorts of different organizations and countries doing lunar exploration. So in 2019, we had China landing on the far side of the moon for the first time. So when we look up at the night sky and we see the moon, it's always the one side that we see. The other side is not always dark. Thanks to Pink Floyd for that lack of clarity. It's not always dark, but it is always far. It's always the far side, the back side of the moon.
It's bottom.
So the Chinese landed there. The moon. Yeah,
oh no, now I know what they say. I'm mooning you. Okay. Sorry.
So the Chinese National Space Agency was the first one to land on the far side of the moon in 2019. We've seen India land near the South Pole for the first time on behalf of India. We've seen Japan recently land on the surface of the moon. We've seen private companies attempt to land, a couple of them, an Israeli private company, as well as an American private company, attempted in the last few years. And then we had the first private company with a mostly successful landing by a company called Intuitive Machines just last month. So that was the first private company to touch down mostly okay. One of the six legs of the lander toppled, or made it topple over because it bent, caught on some regolith and caused the lander to bend over, and its solar panels weren't aligned properly. So we're waiting for the end of the 14-day lunar night to see if that lander wakes up again. And on board that lander, there is a low-frequency radio astronomy instrument, and that would potentially be the first data that we get back from the surface of the moon on a portion of the universe that we can't see from Earth. So that little preamble was just to say there are a lot of different organizations and countries going to the moon, but there's actually a part of the universe we've never seen clearly before, and that's the below 10 megahertz electromagnetic frequency band, because our atmosphere and ionosphere basically reflects and bounces and interferes with signals with wavelengths like 30 meters and longer. So in that particular band of the spectrum, we have not done much observation. So the idea with Africa to Moon is to put the world's first radio telescope array, firstly on a location not the far side, to do some testing as a technology demonstrator, and then eventually to roll out the full telescope on the far side of the moon. So we can currently under consideration to launch with a launch partner, our fellow BRICS China, potentially in 2028. So we are super excited, right? There's a lot of activity going on the moon, but back to the motivation, you know, we want the 500 million children to be living in Africa in the next sort of decade or so. That's half a billion children predicted to be living in Africa within the next few years. we want these children to look up at the moon and feel a sense of belonging, to feel like they are a part of the exploration and the celebration of the space that we find ourselves in, whether that's in our community, on our continent, on our planet, or in our solar system, which is increasingly becoming the sphere of human existence with all of this activity planned for the moon. So that's our main aim, to be, you know, for Africa to do something first, for the first time in space exploration. So that's the Foundation for Space Development Africa that's running the Africa to Moon project. And yeah, potentially to be the world's first radio array on the moon that can look below 10 megahertz for the first time. So some people are saying we might see techno signatures there. So, you know, if you're an intelligent alien civilization and you wanted to hide your activities from humans, you probably would pick that band because they know we can't receive those frequencies from the surface. Okay, that's a bit more fringe, but that would be one of the applications.
Ooh, I'm sensing this day is going to come where we are going to be reminded we're not the only species. I don't know why. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but seriously, oh, you don't know. You don't know what you don't know, because we're living in an era now where so much has been hidden from society and the truths are starting to come out. I mean, you and I had a long talk about this. And one of the conversations that we did have also about this is the, you know, the system is failing us and the system is broken. And we see it all around us, from political, you know, to what's happening in the corporate environment, what's happening with the environment, with climate change. There's so much going on. And I'm an ethnographer, right? So I can see from an ethnography perspective what's happening on the internet. And I have to tell you, I almost sense it as, and you also know I'm a sensitive, so I mean, I can openly have this conversation with you, but I can almost sense this quiet hum before a storm. You know, that weird silence that you get, there is this weird hum. There's a lot of noise, but there's very little real signals. And I do feel that we are moving into a time where people are obviously moving more towards their inward journeys and really reflecting on themselves and trying to find the quiet in the storm. It's showing online. But at the same time, I'm also feeling as if there is going to be an extraordinary activist movement that's going to erupt, because everything is taken off from what's happening online internally, and it's going off the ground. And I'm not trying to sound like I'm creating conspiracy theories. I'm just saying what I'm seeing. And, you know, from your perspective on what you are seeing in your realm and in your work, what you're doing, how do you think the system is failing us?
Oh, I just get so excited when you say it's calm before the storm, because sometimes I wonder if I was born in the most exciting period in human history, but most days I'm convinced this is the most exciting period in human history. It's taken us 4 billion years to get to the point where we have the technological capability to explore beyond our own planet. Look at the footage coming back from Mars. You know, our imaginations are almost there already, because this like super high resolution footage of the surface of Mars is just transporting us there before we actually get our bodies there, which is like on the cards for the next few years. We are already there in a sense with our Perseverance rover, Curiosity rover, the Chinese rover also roving there. So all three of them busy doing their data collection on the surface of next door neighbor planet Mars. So our technology's made a lot possible. It's made this global communications network possible. It's made interconnectivity on a technological level possible in a way that's never been before. I mean, you know, when we were born, there was no internet. It's crazy to think back to a time where we weren't as connected as we are now. We almost take it for granted. But on the flip side, this technological development is resulting in the destruction of our life support system. And at the moment, we only have one, and it's called Earth. And we live here, along with all the other living systems that make this biosphere, this ecological system possible. And back to the interconnectivity of everything, I think what we need to focus on more is the fact that we cannot survive without this network of life. There's no such thing as a single living system. You know, no matter how much technology we build, there is no such thing as a single living system. From the bacteria that makes us able to digest food, to the photosynthetic systems that produce the oxygen that we breathe, to the fungi that decompose all the organic matter and recycle everything back so that new life can form and die and be born. This is all one big story of which we are actually just a player, you know, along with all the other organisms also contributing towards the cycle. So if I were to pinpoint a point of failure for the systems that we are building, our governance structures, you know, our economic system, our resource utilization management strategies or lack thereof, have all been built on this false assumption of separation between us and the world in which we find ourselves. And I've already, you know, indicated that 10% of our bodies are as old as the universe. So, you know, that's a scientific proof that we are part of a big network of existence. So we can interpret that in any way we want, including talking to trees. But this is a fundamental truth that we are part of this interconnected system. So if we are looking at how we can do better than the systems we are seeing around us breaking down, I think that, you know, nurturing relationships, acknowledging connection, acknowledging interconnectedness is a way to start to, and we are already, so it has already started this rebuilding of parallel systems. So what does that look like? I mean, there's many different levels that we can talk about. I think the collapse of the system we can probably avoid because that's depressing and we all know about it.
Yeah, like, hello. Let's not go there.
we all know how the system is breaking. Let me not elaborate on that. But instead of being scared or uncertain or fearful about how this is going to turn out, I think we can get really excited. As I said, I was now excited when you said it's the calm before the storm, because you know, the word apocalypse or cataclysm or revolution all imply that there's a lot of unrest and upheaval, but this is necessary in order to reach a new equilibrium, a new state of being, a new way of doing things. And so I'm sorry to say that anyone who's on Earth who is looking for a predictable, comfortable existence, you've come to the wrong place at the wrong time. So let's just acknowledge that. Let's acknowledge that things are not going to be calm, they're not going to be predictable, but they are going to be super exciting, I believe, because, you know, we are witnessing the shift for sure. So I think importantly is to be conscious and think about how we can lead, starting with ourselves, a way to a more positive future from this time of chaos, relative chaos in our social structures, in our organizations and in our economic system. Because from that sort of uncertainty, we can start to build in a new direction, and perhaps without the, you know, global conflict that is always a worry. You know, can we avoid a total breakdown of like World War III and start to build these systems to become strong enough while we see all this local upheaval in all different parts of the world? Yeah, so I suppose we want to make it concrete and say, what does that look like? And so as someone who loves thinking about setting up worlds on other planets, this is actually an excellent thought experiment on like, what kind of society would we build if we had the chance to start from scratch? So you can like transport your mind to Mars for a second. Imagine that you... Okay, that might take you longer than a second. For those of you who haven't thought about it before, you're recruited to go to Mars. You're going to be part of this community that's going to build a new world from scratch. Obviously, with all of your internal memory and DNA and everything you've brought with you from Earth. But basically, you've got the opportunity to create new organizational structures, new governance structures, new economic systems, new resource management strategies, and new culture. And I think this is a great way to start imagining, you know, how your contribution there, so far away, 200 million kilometers, could be some energy, some thoughts towards how you may implement such a rebuilding here on Earth. So to get to really basics, I think resource management strategies, or complete lack thereof, have characterized a lot of our time here on Earth, where we've just like moved to new places and we've run out of resources or destroyed an environment in one part of the world, move on to another, you know. But now there's 8 billion of us, and it's not clear where you go when you destroy the current place you're living. And so rebuilding has got to be a fundamental part of it. And power and water and food are necessary for communication systems, which are necessary for healthcare and education. So we really have to start at the beginning. Sure. And I can talk for hours about the technology that's required to be more efficient in power production. Like, hello, we don't need to emphasize that point.
Oh my gosh. I mean, hello.
Water management strategies. Sorry for anyone who hasn't had water the last few days. Weeks. And food, you know, these are the most fundamental categories of resources that we need to solve. And there are all sorts of technological solutions available for that. But at the end of the day, it's this connectivity, this connection that we need to focus on. I think the technologies are there. I can talk about them till the cars come home, all the different ways that we can do things more efficiently using technology. But at the end of the day, the change has to come from within us. And I think it comes down to really simple things like eye contact, connection, appreciating people, taking time to, you know, we're in the middle of this shift to what can AI do that can replace human contribution. And fantastic, let's replace the boring stuff with AI. I'm all for it. But when we are dealing with people, let's not forget that human part of that interaction, that eye contact, that telling you that you appreciate what people are doing for you, no matter what their task is in your day. It can be as simple as that in terms of thinking how we build this connection. But maybe we can interrogate that a bit more. But I feel like I've been going on.
No, but I can hang on your stories and your lips all day long, because, I mean, the words that you speak is wisdom, it's truth. And it's almost like you've lived previous lives and you have all this wisdom and knowledge. And it's like, you know, it's so important for us to learn to build relationships with each other. I feel like there's definitely been a state of where everybody is just, I don't know, it is like that Pink Floyd song, We Don't Need No Education. It's like we're going into the sausage factory and we're just looking into the factory, and, you know, we're not, busy is becoming the new dumb. We are so busy that we're not paying attention to what's going on around us. And it's when our worlds get disrupted where we go, hang on, what can we do about it? And I think that that's the stage where we're at. And what I am learning at grassroots level from some of my friends that are working on projects, traveling the world, you know, trying to save the environment, climate justice, and all that kind of, you know, activist movements, you can't do it without each other. You need each other to make that happen. And you have to work with the complexities in the system, like from a corporate all the way down to the community, and making that work. And that thing that you just said, eye contact, is so important. It is the vehicle into your soul. That is the being of who you are, is in your eyes. I mean, there's no wonder that technology is like obsessed with our eyeballs, because they can tell so much about our emotions, how distracted we are and how we feel about things just by looking at our eyeballs.
Yeah, and I think that connection needs to start inwardly. So to feel connected to this body that does so much work for our minds every day that we don't often thank or acknowledge or give love to, through to, you know, the thoughts that you have in your mind, you have control over that. So, you know, being loving towards your body, being thinking loving thoughts in your mind, consciously trying to, you know, swing like more than half of your thoughts to positive. You've got to start somewhere, you know. These are things we have control of inwardly. And I think that's where the focus starts. But then the sense of connection, I think, should be extended everywhere. So sometimes if I'm feeling overwhelmed, I look at the broad shoulders of the mountain and just think, you know, how much steadfastness and knowledge and wisdom this mountain has after being sitting in this particular location here in the Cape, where there's so many beautiful mountains. You know, what have these mountains seen in their lifespan? So this sense of interconnection, I think, should go from the environment in which we find ourselves, or say from our bodies to our fellow humans, to the fellow creatures that we interact with, and to all the way to the sky and the mountains and the ocean. Because, you know, a famous Canadian philosopher McLuhan said that we are not passengers on spaceship Earth. We are the crew. Hmm. And at the moment, we are on the surface of Earth, and perhaps soon we will expand beyond the surface of Earth. Maybe not all of us, but we will in 2026, if the NASA Artemis program goes to plan, have humans living on the surface of the moon, working sure. and living there. And if China gets it right in 2033, we will have people living on the surface of Mars, living and working there. So then our physical environment will expand. However, our own spaceship, the planet that we originate from, our home, let's say, our home will always be Earth. 4 billion years of evolution here have made that the case. And, you know, the overview effect is one where astronauts look back down on the Earth. And I think it was Al Warden, who I had the real pleasure of meeting in his older days. He passed away a few years ago. He said he had traveled, I'm now probably misquoting him, but he didn't travel to the moon to see the moon. He traveled to the moon to look back on Earth. Wow. And this is a feeling that many astronauts have referred to. It's called the overview effect, whereby looking at the fragility of the thin atmosphere that sort of supports all life on the surface of the planet, looking at the oceans, the vastness, and thinking about all the life teeming underneath the surface of the water that covers 70% of our planet, to see that from afar and to get that perspective on how vast our Earth is, but also how fragile is a really important aspect of thinking about space exploration, this perspective that we have. So not all of us may get the chance to look down at Earth from space, although some of us are trying to get ahead in that direction. We don't need to, right? We can sit wherever we are and use our imaginations or Google Earth or whatever tech we may want to tap into to get the sense of perspective on our own planet, the sense of appreciation, I think. Life is very little understood by science, in my humble opinion.
Yeah.
You know, chemistry we kind of derive from physics, but biology we have not satisfactorily derived from physics and chemistry. So, you know, life, so mysterious, so precious, so complex, so beautiful, and our planet's teeming with it. So yeah. I think from wherever we're sitting right now, we don't have to be in a spaceship heading to Mars, although some of us are gunning for that option. I think we need to foster that sense of appreciation, that deep sense of appreciation for the miracle of being alive and the miracle of all the other living systems that are here with us for this crazy ride. Around our sun on spaceship Earth.
I'm going to ask you a question I've always wanted to ask you. There's a lot of conversations happening around the planets and the positioning of the planets and the stars and where they are at this particular time that we're living in. Some of the positions haven't been where they're at in 25 to 30,000 years. Do you feel, from a scientific perspective, that these things have an impact on frequencies and, you know, how gravitation works and how, you know, everything happens around us? What is your view on that?
So what is the scientific perspective on astrology?
Yes. Okay. You said it.
Well, let me start with that side. There is no scientific perspective on astrology.
Okay.
So science can do many things, including enabling us to talk on video through these devices that gave us some trouble. Here we are. Technology is great, and technology we build because of our scientific understanding of reality. However, whenever you are feeling intimidated by science or scientists, here's a nice thing to fall back on. The latest update from cosmologists and people who study the universe is that 95% of the universe is not observable. Not observable, right? That means we cannot interact it or measure it or see it, even if we wanted to, because we don't know how. So, of the 5% that we can see, this is light and matter, right? Regular matter on the periodic table, and light, which the human eye can see the visible part of the spectrum of. Our telescopes, like the one I mentioned, can look below 10 megahertz at longer wavelengths. That's 5% of the universe. So for me, it was totally, totally feasible that there is a lot out there that we don't understand, and that this ancient tradition of astrology may be accounted for by a whole bunch of phenomena that we don't yet understand. I'm completely comfortable with that. Some scientists may not be comfortable with the vast unknown, but then they should indeed go chat to a cosmologist today to find out just how little we know. So I think we've been observing the universe not only from Earth, but from a very tiny part of Earth for most of us, you know. Our city or our town or our home may be the kind of realm in which we observe the rest of what's going on. So my motivation for exploration has always been, whether it's space exploration, whether it's building telescopes on Earth that look into space, whether it's putting these telescopes in space to look even further, whether it's putting these telescopes on the far side of the moon to get radio quiet zones away from the Earth's natural and technological emissions to listen in the low frequency spectrum to the rest of the universe, or whether it's like personally going to Mars and looking for fossils to check whether life once existed there in the oceans that we know once covered the surface of Mars. These are all examples of like exploration of space. And whether or not we personally may find these, you know, part of our future path or not, this knowledge does have an impact on the rest of our society, I believe. You know, if we go back to the Apollo era, we can argue, in fact, that the mobile phone, the personal computer, and the internet all emerged from the inspiration that so many young people felt, either listening on the radio or watching on TV to the announcement that humans were stepping on the moon for the first time. After the 60s, the 70s, 80s, and 90s literally gave birth to all of the technologies, including the personal computer, mobile phone, and the internet, that make so much of our regular daily lives today possible. So I have no doubt that our continued exploration of space will lead to new revolutions in the way we see ourselves and the way we see the world around us. And it'll be really exciting to understand what potential mechanisms do lie behind systems of knowledge like astrology, which are really ancient. And I think it's important to respect knowledge systems that we may not understand within the current paradigm. Because look what the current paradigm is doing to our life support system. not all of it is optimal. Not all of it is optimal. One of the big open questions in science is trying to bring together our understanding of the very small, so quantum physics, with our understanding of the very big, so like general relativity. And this has not been done. So even within our view of the world from the surface of Earth, there are massive gaps in our understanding of how the different theories fit together. So there's a lot of work to be done in science. Anyone interested in getting involved, we need all the help we can get. However, I think there's a lot to be gained from looking at ancient wisdom also, particularly in this time of great change, to look back at systems like living systems, like fungal networks, and the interconnectivity of living systems. I think is a great way to think about how to perhaps survive the current era, because humans have not been around that long in the larger scheme of things. So let's go back to ancient human knowledge, but more importantly, let's think about even more ancient knowledge systems that exist in the living systems around us that have been here on Earth much longer than us.
It makes so much sense. Like, it also is, it's so parallel also with what we're trying to do with conscious leaders, right? So, I've identified four things that I think is very important for us to address systemic issues. It's cultural intelligence, it's emotional intelligence, spiritual intelligence, and then also foresight intelligence. I think we also can have an idea of where the future is going to go if we don't do something about it today. And taking all of these various parts of us and almost infuse it with the systemic issues. I heard this if you think of a venomous spider, like a black widow, if you have been bitten by one, you have to use its venom as antidote, but how do you say it? Antidote, right? And the same thing would happen with a problem, and the problems in the system is you would need to do the same thing, because the answer is also in the problem. So those things are important in order to understand the entire system. You know, what else would you think is lacking in order to understand systemic issues?
I think trust, I mean, we can go specific, but we can also go really broad, and I like to go really broad a lot of the time. So I think trusting your intuition. So every decision that you make that you feel is not quite the right one, but for some or other reason you've been pressured into doing it, and I think we all have multiple examples of this every day. Mm-hmm. So we have to be realistic about, you know, probably having to make some decisions that are not exactly the one we might have felt was right. But some of these moments are way more important than others. And I think if we start to give a voice to our inner feelings about what the right path is, then we can start to close this gap between what could be and what is. And what could be is an amazing, harmonious world where we sense this cycle of life and death and our role in it, and play a role in the continuity of life. Because, you know, it's quite a paradox sometimes to see that what people are most afraid of is death, but death is literally the only guarantee. So I think what's more important than being afraid of how you die is making sure that your life is contributing to the past and the present and the future. And how can your life contribute to the past? I think that's an acknowledging all of the people and all of the knowledge that's come before us. Your contribution to the present, I think, is following your intuition in terms of how you want to spend your time and your energy in your brief time on this planet, and contributing to the future to make sure that your daily decisions are somehow meaningful for all of the other life forms around you, all of the other people around you, that you are paying forward, whether it's in resources, time and energy, or just in belief and imagination for what can come next. So if there's a passion of yours that you feel doesn't get enough time in your life, you know, maybe it's time to switch to give that passion more of your time. You know, the things that you get excited about doing, let them fill more of your day than they currently do. I've always been a bit of a person to buck the system or do things my own way. So it's easy. It comes more naturally to me to say, you know, bugger that, I'm going to do it my way. But I think this attitude does have value, because there are a lot of habits and cultural practices, and call them whatever you want, that we have as humans that we've inherited. And we don't have time to maybe analyze every one of them in detail, but like sometimes it just seems ridiculous.
Yes.
If it's ridiculous, just don't do it. You've got the choice. You've got the choice. I think if all of us at least once a day say, no, this is ridiculous, like I refuse to carry on doing things this way, then, and speak to like-minded people who then agree, you know, then you end up, I don't know, privatizing the municipality, or maybe you just end up going for a run instead of doing a boring meeting. I don't know. These can manifest in many different ways. Leaving, maybe you join an intergalactic trip to live on another planet. We don't know where our intuitions and our passions will take us. But I think trusting gut feeling is not promoted enough nowadays. And that's part of the ancient knowledge that we carry with us, whether it's genetic or more spiritual, however we want to interpret it. I think we should learn to trust our bodies a lot more. They have a lot of wisdom in them. Yeah. So if something puts you off, stay away from it, you know, trust that feeling.
Absolutely. Like I said to my husband the other day, because I've started doing, I'm practicing to improve my intuition. How's that for a vibe? So we would have color cards or anything, and I would have it behind my back, and then he would put one behind me, and then I have to guess what the color is, and then I would just like really try and focus, you know, from an intuition perspective. Training your intuition is also so important. I think we've always put it on the shelf as if it's something separate from us. But in order for us to really be innovative and to bring our imaginations to the table, I also believe that the part that's the most important is our intuition. And what I've been seeing a lot is we've been reprimanded for bringing our whole selves to the table. So the spiritual part of you, we don't talk about it. Leave it at home. But when you come and do your job, this is what you have to do. And you have to get these results, X, Y, Z, right? And what's happening is people can't show up authentically as who they are as human beings. And by doing that, you are cutting off almost like the tentacles of possibility. And for me, I feel that this is something that I really want to address, because intuition takes us places. If you just look at what all of these great technologies and everything that's emerging was born from intuition, a hunch.
Totally, totally. Yeah, when I've looked back at the history of science, you see so many of the breakthrough ideas that the different genius level scientists at various points in human history had. And often it was when they were riding a bicycle, taking a walk in the park, showering, lying in the bath, a eureka moment.
Yes.
It's not necessarily due to the routine, rigorous academic training that you've had. I'm talking now like specifically about sort of physics discoveries. Often it's that training in conjunction with a flash of inspiration, call it what you will. Musicians have also had sort of dreams where compositions have been floated down to their conscious mind as they've woken up, you know. So given that 95% of the universe is so-called dark matter and energy, there's a lot of room for imagination here about what's really going on in reality. There's a lot of room, like 95%, if you want to put a number on it.
Exactly.
You know, maybe we can clarify what the stark energy and matter is any moment now, and then we'll be back to the sort of arrogant perspective that humans have sort of figured most of the stuff about the reality out. But at the moment, we are really not there. There's a lot to be discovered, and I think it is a time to reflect back on, yeah, less. Intellectual knowledge bases. So, you know, our collecting our facts and viewing the world as separate to ourselves, measuring it, dissecting it, analyzing it, has resulted in us being able to build, you know, transistors so that we can make computers and we can link them all together using light and fiber optic connections to send these signals super fast around the planet and to others. But to go back to what we were saying earlier, I think that's to negate the sense of connectedness with reality. If you view reality as something that you can probe and measure and understand objectively, then you lose maybe as much as 95% of what that reality is, because you don't feel it from the sense of oneness that is, in fact, a fundamental truth, even from physics perspective. This oneness in terms of the matter and indeed the light that form all of us. You know, another physics story about ancient light is that the cosmic microwave background, which is the radiation that was formed these 380,000 years after the Big Bang when the first hydrogen atoms were forming, these photons are actually traveling all the way through the whole universe from the edge right to Earth, taking billions of years on this trip. And, you know, we are measuring them. That's another thing radio telescopes do, is measure this cosmic microwave background that's arriving to Earth after traveling for billions of years. So, like, we bathed in the ancient light from the beginning of the universe. You know, we are connected with everything. So if there is a way to really understand who we are and what's going on here, I think it does start internally with that acknowledgement that this weird thing that is consciousness, where we're able to experience ourselves in this reality, you know. Maybe we're at the toddler phase where we've figured out that we have agency in this world, so we're busy like destroying things and building things, but maybe destroying more things than we're building.
Yes.
Let's progress to the point where we acknowledge this oneness between ourselves, in spite of this body that we see as being kind of separate to the rest of the stuff we see around us. Let's like close our eyes, metaphorically or really, and remember that, you know, this is all in fact one big system of which we are just a part, and celebrating that and listening to those feelings, voices, messages, whatever you want to call them, that come from this ancient lineage or from within ourselves or within our subconscious, within our genetics, whatever you want to call it. Let's focus more on that in order to maintain ourselves as part of the puzzle going forward, because I think the Earth is resilient. The balance of the ecosystems here can be seen as fragile, and we are destroying a lot of the biodiversity and the ecosystems that support the diversity of life. But on the whole, Earth is resilient. Earth will remain.
Yes.
Earth is a planet. Earth will be here a while. The question is, will we be around for the next era? And I think if we want to be around for the next era, and I don't think it makes sense not to want to be around, let's be positive, we deserve to be around, we're going to do better, then we have to acknowledge that we are, yeah, a piece of this beautiful puzzle that is the mystery of life.
Beautiful, 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 beautiful. I almost feel like I had big bangs happening here in my head. But this is also one thing. Our brains have got billions of neurons, like galaxies of stars are in our heads. Like, I mean, like, we can't pretend they don't exist. It's like I have fireworks in my head every morning. I'm at that stage in my life where I'm like, every morning when I wake up with an idea, I'm going to execute, even if I get so many no's. And the first time, so when I started Conscious Leaders, I just woke up one morning, okay, I have to build a community today. We actually reached our community has grown in about just over 40 days to 500 corporate women. And
wow,
I'm so excited, right? And we've also have I think between all the communities and what we've managed, I think is over 1,000 women now. But I think what is fascinating for me is that I didn't have a plan for where that part's going to go. Like, I was just like, okay, I'm going to change this, I'm going to do this. And every morning I wake up with an idea and I execute it. And I think if we as human beings can get to the point where we stop planning so much and actually let our intuition guide us as to where's the next step and feel our way through things. So many times when you see some of the greatest organizations or the greatest movies or things that have been developed, they always tell you, I had no idea what I was doing in the beginning. And it's usually the best ideas form from that you're starting to work on when you didn't know what you were doing. I think it's when we start putting too much structure in play where it actually becomes more bureaucratic, and then we start putting it back into a system that doesn't work, where if it has fluidity, I think that there's far more power in it.
Definitely, yeah. So I think on that note, you know, Earth, as I said, sorry for the people looking for a predictable, calm existence, wrong planet, wrong time, or maybe wrong planet. I think Earth has always been fairly turbulent. You know, things here are unpredictable. And that's because of the life, in fact. So, you know, people might find it terrifying or fun, depending on your personality, to go and live on Mars. But things on Mars will be fairly predictable. Why is that? Well, the planet doesn't appear to have life on the surface, not that we can see anyway. And the conditions on the surface are quite harsh for life that we know of. So terrestrial life wouldn't survive long on the surface of Mars. So the turbulence that we see on Mars is in the form of weather, but we have quite a good idea of the temperature ranges that happen there. There is a bit of sort of dust storms that can block the sun for periods, but these are also part of geological cycles that we can kind of predict on Mars. When we come to Earth, things are highly unpredictable because of the life. So, and our planet's teeming with it. So from a scoop of water from the ocean, you know, there's like billions of microbes just in that handful of water living in the salty oceans that cover most of our surface, all the way up to the humans and their systems of organization and governance and economic systems, which cause conflict and unpredictability. So how do we navigate these shifts that are happening all the time? Well, one way is to go to Mars, where you'd have a much more predictable existence in the beginning anyway, until it became busy, and then it would also become chaotic. But I think one thing that would characterize a community that set up camp from scratch on Mars would be a deep respect for life, in a way that we haven't quite fostered in the whole way that we could do here on Earth. You know, we've taken it for granted that we're surrounded by all of these living systems all the time. Whereas on Mars, we will bring each and every single one of them. Every seed will have its own sort of space in the cargo, you know, every sure. System of microbes that we bring with, whether that's for the composting units or for the fertilization units, all of these will be specifically brought as part of the family, part of the community. So a sense of deep appreciation of the interconnectivity of life would characterize the community on Mars, because if those seeds don't sprout and if that wastewater management system doesn't work, that's the end of the resources like food and water that the humans will require. So back to navigating the unknown here on Earth, I think that sense of appreciation for all of the living systems that may make our existence really unpredictable here on Earth. Like, I would say Earth is the most unpredictable planet in the solar system right now, largely because of human activity, also shifting things on faster time scales than the planet may have been used to in the past few billion years. But this is all okay. At the moment, we're all still here, we're all still conscious, and we're all still able to lead. So this is the right time. This is the right time to do it. It's okay to feel confused, but how do we find focus? And I think through appreciation and through the sense of visions and goals that are greater than just us can be an enormous sense of calm. So think about all of the just your own family members or all of your ancestors. You know, we all trace our Homo sapiens species back to a few individuals probably living here in Southern Africa, is one of the theories anyway, perhaps the San, who have a huge amount of genetic diversity, which indicates they may indeed have been the first humans. So not only are we here in South Africa in a really turbulent time, but we are potentially living on the most ancient ground that humans have ever tread foot on, right here in Southern Africa. So maybe it is here that we come full circle and start to remember that ancient wisdom that indigenous peoples like the San had in terms of seeing the miraculous and the divine in all systems around them, from the rocks to the trees, to the ocean, to the food sources. To see that divinity in the world around them and the resources that we don't consume is even the wrong word. You know, recycling them to in order the continuity of life. So, a lot of our wording in our current culture needs to change. I think we can't see people as customers. We can't see people as consumers. We have to see people as part of the network and the continuity of life. And when we start focusing on that aspect of ourselves as enabling, as flowing instead of controlling and destroying, then I think we can find a more peaceful way to live. So whether we do it, we have to start on an individual level, but maybe in our lifetimes we can actually start to spread this vision of harmony and continuity and enabling to become a more dominant paradigm in all of our communities, because this competitive take, 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 consume, consume, consume will only take us to one point, and that would be eventual distinction. We even have the weapons at our disposal to do that since
true story
1940s, when we demonstrated that was possible to literally eliminate ourselves. So the microbes would be fine. They all survive this at Chernobyl. The fungi and the microbes and even the fauna are doing okay. So it's probably just going to be us. We're going to wipe out. We don't need to become all sad about all the other species. A lot of them will probably survive. We're the ones who won't survive.
My God.
So let's acknowledge our part in the network. Let's enable the continuity of humanity, because I'm proud to be human, not for every aspect of what I see humanity manifesting as, but on the whole, we have to have a sense of pride for all of our ancestors that have come before us, and have a sense of pride in all the people that will follow after us. So I think a sense of pride is a good one to try to focus on. Think about what makes you feel proud about being human. Focus on that. Focus on gratitude for all the other living systems that are also eking out their existence in this multitudinous living library here on Earth. Yeah, I think about enabling the future.
I love that. And I love that you bring the soft skills in, you know? It's actually the soft skills that makes everything work. I love it. And living in harmony with each other, showing gratitude and actually understanding what it means to be human and being proud of it. And also identifying in each other what it is that we see and the light that we see in each other. I think that we focus so much on the darkness and those around us that we forget that there's so much light in human beings as well. You know, Adriana, I could talk to you for days. We know that when we sit together, we talk and talk and talk, and I listen. I feel like I have fireside with you. Like it's like, it's like I'm getting all these epiphanies. Oh my gosh, I never thought about it that way. That is incredible. I'm probably going to listen to this episode like 200 times, and then I'm going to actually go, okay, here's action points and here's things to do. Thank you so much for always imparting your wisdom to us and all those around you. You always give your knowledge freely, And it comes with such a humble tone. It doesn't come with, you know, arrogance or anything like that. It's just like, here's the facts, here's some interesting things. And you just take people on an exploration with your knowledge. And I just want to say thank you and how you do that and for investing in yourself so that you can bless us.
Well, thank you, Carmen. I'm probably going to listen back and say, did I really say that? You bring that out in me and people. So thank you for being you, full of enthusiasm and excitement and energy for the future and for getting stuff done, getting meaningful, coherent, good, positive, harmonious stuff done. So I'm proud to be part of Conscious Leaders and any other activities. Always happy to interact.
You're going
to
regret that. We'll pull you in and we're going to do an exhibition we're going to go on a journey with you. We're going to go stop eating for a month and then we're going to go underwater or do something, one of your proudly human journeys. We're going to go underwater for 100 days and explore the planet beneath the surface. Come on, people, come on. It's going to be like, what is that, Ocean Gate? Oh my gosh. Oh, I'm so clumsy. You know, with the menopause at the moment, the balance is not so good at the moment. I might break something.
Yeah, one thing I think we can be really grateful for as South Africans is that our system is kind of like breaking down around us here at quite a rapid rate. And we should be really excited about that, because in case you're wondering how people will build a parallel system, well, guess what? We already are. Look around you. We already are. And we're leading the game on a planetary scale because our systems are breaking down faster than anyone else. So it's a gift. It's a gift, guys.
Oh, I love you guys. It's a gift. It's a gift. Don't worry. It's a gift. Oh my goodness. Thank you so much. That was awesome.
Thank you.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.